we just got to muddle through it, right? That's all right. I love that song. And actually, one reason why I wanted to sing that song is because we're going to be talking a little bit about that, how we walk with Jesus. And we have been talking about faith that moves. This was a follow-up to us talking about how it is that we recognize God being in our life, how the Spirit impacts us. And when we think about faith that moves, one of the things that we have to do is fundamentally think about exactly what faith is. Because if your understanding of faith is somehow incorrect or skewed, or if it doesn't quite make sense, sometimes we can feel like faith doesn't work. You know, we can feel like, well, man, I've been faithful and I've really been relying on God, but it just doesn't seem to be working. And very often it's our understanding of how faith works that, and we looked at this a few weeks ago, how faith, you know, where he says faith and deeds, they have to be accompanied. You know, they have to be together. You can't just say I believe in something and call that faith, but you also have to be able to walk and live and exist and do things to accompany that same faith. And today I want us to look at kind of like that song, you know, having a closer walk with thee, having a closer walk with Jesus, because frankly, we can look in the Bible and we can read scriptures and see how the disciples, as they were walking with Jesus, their faith grew and it increased. And we can forget that sometimes when we're struggling and our faith isn't increasing, when our faith doesn't seem to be having much effect, it doesn't seem to be moving, sometimes it's because we're not really walking with him. You know, maybe conceptually or mentally or something like that, maybe we're there, but we're not actively walking with him. And so I want to look at that today. The title of the lesson is 10,000 Hours. 10,000 hours. Now, 10,000 hours, if you extrapolate this out over, say, an 8-hour day of work, you know, and then you put that into a work week and you go out, that's roughly 5 years, right? That's 5 years of 8-hour shifts. And that's including, now, that's including if you get, you know, 2 weeks off of vacation. You know, some of us have those kind of jobs, you get 2 weeks off of vacation. Others of us, we work all the time, round the clock. I have to make sure I get my 2 hours. We go on that cruise in the first of the year. Thing is, you think 10,000 hours is a long time. And the reason why I came up with this title, there's a guy who wrote a book. This guy wrote this book called Outliers. Now, I've talked about this in the past, but this guy's name is Malcolm Gladwell. And he basically said, if you put in the time and the energy and the effort and the study and the discipline, if you put in 10,000 hours into any particular thing, you will become an expert. The idea is that if you've invested it, and it doesn't mean, you know, you're just kind of there getting it by osmosis. No, if you're actively doing something and focus on something for 10,000 hours, you will become an expert. Basically, if you were working somewhere full time, after 5 years, you would eventually become an expert. Now, critics and people who, you know, have kind of tried to poke holes in his, you know, theory have talked about that doesn't really include, you know, if somebody's a savant, somebody's some genius and they just have some natural, you know, amazing ability, or if it's particularly specialized, like, you know, some people are just naturally fast or tall or strong, you know. I was thinking, like, yesterday we were hanging out with some people. Bruce is 6'6". Bruce, he did not put in 10,000 hours to become, you know, 6'6". It just, you know, that's genes and things that are hereditary, right? Some of us, it's like, you know, we're shorter than Bruce, and we didn't put in the time to become short. We didn't specialize in that. Those types of things don't really, it isn't really what he's talking about. What he's talking about is how people become experts at things that they focus on, it, they give their time and their heart and their attention to, and frankly, that isn't any different when it comes to us and our walk with God. If you put in the time, if you're walking with Jesus, like I said about the disciples, as they were walking with him, their faith grew. And so when we think, well, why isn't my faith growing? What's going on with me? See, a lot of it is because we've maybe put in 10,000 hours, but we've put in 10,000 hours in the church. Or we've put in 10,000 hours into doing certain things almost mechanically, but we really haven't put in the 10,000 hours of walking with Jesus. So as a result, we haven't become experts at being disciples. We haven't become experts at loving like Christ did. We haven't become experts at forgiving and having the same compassion and mercy that he did. We've become experts at church. And we know everything about, okay, well, you know, the seats have to be this way. And you know, we have communion every Sunday. And we know why we do this. And we know the doctrine, as it's talked about in 1 Timothy. We know the doctrine, but it's the life that we haven't invested the 10,000 hours in. And so I kind of want to look at that today. One of his, he has many quotes that are very good from this book. I'm actually currently in the process of reading it. Actually, it's reading itself to me. This is one of those audio books. I'm letting it kind of talk to me. But it says, researchers have settled on what they believe is the magic number for true expertise, 10,000 hours. And you think about it, that sounds like a lot of hours until you think about, for some of us, and I can speak for myself, and it was really challenging. I was thinking, how many years have I actually spent as a Christian? When did I give my life to Christ? When did I decide I'm going to follow him to the day I die? And how many of those hours since then have I truly been walking with Jesus as opposed to just learning information or understanding the rules, but not living it? And we'll talk about that here in just a second. I want to start by looking in Colossians chapter 1, starting in verse 9. It says, for this reason, since the day we heard about you, we have not stopped praying for you. We continually ask God to fill you with the knowledge of his will through all the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives, so that you may live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God, being strengthened with all power according to his glorious might, so that you may have great endurance and patience, and giving joyful thanks to the Father who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of his holy people in the kingdom of light. For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. We see a lot here in just these few verses. We see a lot here that kind of gives us an idea of how we should think about our faith in him, how we should think about how we're supposed to live. It says there that the knowledge of his will through all the wisdom and understanding that the Spirit gives. You know, very often, you know, we think, well, if I just read enough commentaries, I read enough books, if I just spend enough time, focus all of my energy and attention towards understanding, you know, we forget that, you know, it's the Spirit that provides that insight. You know, that's why some people can, it says they can hear but never quite perceive. You know, they see it, but they don't quite get it, because it's not just knowledge. You know, there's that passage that says knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. See, it's how we go about applying the information, the knowledge, the wisdom. That is what helps us to grow in our faith. That is what makes faith move. It goes on here, and it says, live a life worthy of the Lord and please him in every way, bearing fruit in every good work. You think about, well, what does that mean to say, to live a life worthy? You know, the thing that comes to mind for me is when they talk about, you know, how, you know, police officers or people who are enlisted in the military, how they talk about they want you to live a life becoming, you know, a life that is becoming of an officer, somebody who is worthy to wear that uniform, to wear that badge. That means you have to be someone who measures up to the expectations that comes with that calling. That's what it means to be worthy. And then it goes on and says, bearing fruit in every good work, growing in the knowledge of God. Bearing fruit. You know, it's that time, you know, where things are growing. You know, they've gotten to the point where you can kind of see them now. It's not just, you know, you're expecting them to come, but you can kind of see, you know, the things. You can see the apples. You can see the grapes. You can see these things that are growing, bearing fruit. And when we think about what it means for our lives to truly live a life of faith, it involves all these things. It involves us bearing fruit. It involves us allowing the Spirit to give us the understanding, the clarification on how we're supposed to live. It's not just investing the time saying, well, I showed up, you know, like we talked about checklist Jesus, where it's like, okay, if I just check the list of all the different things, well, then I'm here. It's not just showing up here to church service. It's not just saying, okay, I did my part because I went and I served in the community. No, it's not just showing up and checking things off the list, but it's actually taking the time to allow Jesus to work in your life, allowing that Spirit to make sense of things. Being worthy and effective as a Christian comes from knowledge and wisdom given by His Spirit. Given by His Spirit. You know, and that'll make a little bit more sense later. I'm going to talk about this in just a second, because how we get this knowledge from the Spirit, sometimes it can almost seem a little bit tricky, seem almost like it's a little mystical, and it's really not. We'll look at that here in just a second. I want to, you know, talk about this because you've all have heard I'm going through this struggle right now, right? I'm going through this struggle where I'm coaching, and one of the things that came out in this book, Outliers, he was talking about this, and one of the critics, they were talking about these 10,000 hours, and they said, but here's the thing about becoming an expert at something. Over the course of time, the issue with becoming an expert is that for all of the information that you've gathered, it becomes difficult to then disseminate that information and share it with other people. I think about like driving, for example. One of the things is I drive now. I've been driving for close to, 3 years? Not quite, 25 years? Here's the thing. My kid, my son, he's not close to driving yet, thank God, but he asked me questions a lot about how I turn and why I do this and why am I. One time I'm driving down the road and I kept looking in my rearview mirror. You know, he's like, Daddy, why are you looking in the mirror? See, here's the thing about driving, and many of you have been driving longer than me. There are things that you have learned and picked up along the way that you just do instinctively. You don't even have to think about it. It doesn't even occur to you. It's kind of like when somebody holds a door open for you. Most of you, some of you, say thank you. You know, like, it just kind of grinds my gears when people don't do that. But that's the thing. It's like you just instinctively, I see somebody. I don't care who it is. Doesn't matter if it's man, woman, old, young, whatever. If I'm at Wawa and I'm coming out, I hold the door. I don't even think about it. But what's funny is my son, my daughter, they'll ask me, why are you holding the door? See, they don't understand that these are things that they become habit. They become a part of you. And that's the thing about when you become an expert, you can't always share everything because you don't even know that it's there to share. I was talking about baseball. That's one of the things about it. There are things that I'm having to recall the fundamentals of it in teaching it because I don't think about it anymore. I just line up and do it the way that I've done it so many times before. And in the same way, that when it talks about the Spirit, how we learn these things from the Spirit, because here's the thing. You can come here on a Sunday, and the sermon might be okay, and you might get something from it, or you might go and you might get something from Bible study. But guess what? Just like I can't teach my son every possible scenario on a baseball field, just like I can't tell him how to react to everything that's going to happen to him on the road when he starts driving, there are things that he's going to have to learn on his own. There are things that he's going to have to experience. And then he'll be able to say, okay, now I understand why Daddy taught me this thing. Now I understand why Mama told me this thing that I need to do, because now I see how it applies. That is how the Spirit teaches us that wisdom, and it makes that knowledge applicable. That's how our faith grows. But we have to go out and do it. I could tell my son all day long, but he's got to go up to the plate and execute. He's got to go out in the field and execute. When he gets behind the wheel, he's got to execute all the things he's going to learn. The thing he learns at driver's ed, the thing he's going to be taught when he's driving with me and driving with his mom, he's got to learn those things on his own. You cannot do it by proxy. You have to get behind the wheel. And in many ways, we have to remember that we have to get behind the wheel of our own faith. We can't just read it in the book. We can't just see it in someone else. We have to experience it for ourselves. That is what it means to walk with him. Another passage, Matthew chapter 4. We see this where it says, starting in verse 18, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left their boat and their father and followed him. Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. News about him spread all over Syria, and people brought to him all who were ill with various diseases, those suffering pain, the demon-possessed, those having seizures, and the paralyzed. And he healed them. Large crowds from Galilee, the Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan followed him. Now you think about this, and we very often when we're, you know, I know whenever I'm teaching someone about what it means to follow Jesus, what it means to be a true follower of Christ, this is one of those go-to passages where I'll show them how there was an attitude that his disciples had where they dropped everything that they were doing. They decided we're going to leave our nets. They're walking away from what they had previously committed their life to. And they decided, I'm going to commit my life to Jesus. And so I'm leaving everything behind, and I'm going to do it this way. Now, there's more to it, though. See, sometimes we forget that Jesus lived a life that was worthy of leaving everything for. See, they saw something. They didn't just say, okay, well, this is kind of what I have to do. No, it was, I want something more. I want something better. The expectation was that, you know what? I'm not like leaving my life and leaving my dad here behind in the boat and walking away from my career out of duty. They were doing it because they saw something more in the way that Jesus was living his life. And then it goes on, it talks about how word of Jesus spread. People started to hear about Jesus and the things that he was doing. And see, sometimes we have to remember that that's how our life, if we're imitating Christ, that's how our life needs to be. Word should spread about us. People should hear about us. People should, even if they don't know exactly what our name is or what exactly it is that we do, they may not know where we work, you know, unless they work with you, and they may not know where you live, but the way that you live, the actual way that you go about your walk with him, word should spread about you. You know, I heard that this situation happened, and they didn't even get angry. They forgave him. Or this situation came up, and they were willing to share everything they had with that person. You know, this thing went on with somebody in their family, and you should have seen the way that they gathered around them. You should see the way they love this person. See, word gets around even if people don't necessarily know your name. They heard about Jesus, but it wasn't just they heard his name and they heard that this was Mary's boy or, you know. No, they heard about Jesus because of what he was doing. In the same way, to be like Christ, we have to live a life that is worthy, and people should hear of the things that we are doing in our faith. Our reputation should precede us in that faithful way. Being like Jesus means we should also live a life worthy of being imitated by others. Even if somebody doesn't want to do, maybe they say, man, that's a little too much for me, but I want to be like that. I want to have that type of courage. I want to have that type of faith. I want to have that level of sacrifice. I want to love people the way that he or she does. That's what it means to be like Christ. That's what it means to have that type of faith. And, you know, I was thinking about it, you know, because this can't be overlooked. I was thinking about results. And we live in a results-oriented society. You know, you can talk about anything you want. You can say whatever you want. You can say, I've put and invested 10,000 hours into something, and I'm an expert. Eventually, people are going to look for your results. You know, eventually, your tenure has to kind of measure up and match up to the results that we see. You know, I was thinking of how, you know, a comparison, a good sports comparison would be how Kobe Bryant, from the time he was drafted and came into the NBA, he talked about, which a lot of people talked about, how they idolized and wanted to be like Michael Jordan, and they wanted to play like Michael Jordan, they wanted to be like Michael Jordan. But the thing is, as his career went on, his results, not just what he said, not just his rhetoric, but how he played. It wasn't just, okay, you look at the box score and you see the, you know, stats, you see the points. It wasn't just the, you know, the MVPs and players of the year. No, it was how he played. It was how he conditioned himself. It was how he took care of his body. He modeled himself to be as close as he could to the person who he said he idolized and wanted to be like. And the results, it wasn't like anybody else. Because let's face it, everybody, you know, back in the 90s said, oh, I want to be like Mike. You know, they had commercials. You know, they, you know, every little kid in America was out there on the court thinking that they could do the same fadeaway. And, you know, but nobody did it like Kobe. His results are what gave evidence that he took that seriously. You know, I was thinking of how, you know, yes, I'm going to do this bodybuilding competition, but my results eventually are going to matter when I stand up there, right? You know, because I can get up there and flex, and I can get up there and do whatever I want to do, but my results are going to be evident. People will see it. You know, I'll stand there, and the judges will look, and they will know. I don't have to tell them how many hours I put in to training. I don't have to tell them what I've been eating. I don't have to explain to them my regimen and that I do, you know, I go every morning after I drop the kids. They don't need to know all of that. It doesn't even matter. What matters is they will be able to see if I've put in the work that says that I'm worthy. And very often, we have to be reminded of this as Christians, that our results, being fruitful, what does it mean to be fruitful? What does it mean to grow in a fruitful way? What does it mean for your faith to produce fruit? Whose life are you impacting? For everything that Christ has invested in you, for all of the spiritual development, what has been born of that faith? What has been born of that investment? What has been the result of what it is that God has invested in you through Christ? Last passage we'll look at is John chapter 15. It talks a little bit about this. Jesus is talking to his disciples. He says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. I love how that verse in verse 8 ends. He says, showing yourselves to be my disciple. How do you show that? You show it by bearing fruit. You show it by the results. You show it by how productive you are. And production is not, let's be clear, this is not a comparison. This is not a, you know, I'm more productive than, you know, Miss Linda, or I'm more productive than Miss Mary, or man, you know, Lee needs to catch up. No, this is not a comparison thing. Just like an orange tree doesn't produce the same thing as an apple tree, you know, just like there are different fruits. What does it say? You will recognize a tree by its fruit. We have to produce. We have to bear fruit. That's how people know that we're really following him. It says, apart from me, you can do nothing. And when we think about all the hours that we spend, all the time that we've invested, all the information, all the sacrifices, everything that we're doing. You know, somebody was mentioning to me about we're going to be doing over at Luther Towers on next Saturday, and I had no idea. But I'll be there now that I know. But think about the work that we're doing over there at Luther Towers. That work has to produce fruit. It has to result in something if we're truly doing it for him. If we're truly remaining in Christ, we're truly walking with him. You know, we've been doing that for about 4 years now. We've seen some fruit from it. But if we don't see any fruit from it, then what have I been doing? What have we all been investing in? You think about, you know, we're going to have a ladies' day coming up here. Well, what have the ladies been investing in if no fruit comes from it? If for months and months and years, you're putting in the time, you're putting in the energy, you're planning, you're doing all the strategy and everything you can. If it produces no fruit, then the only question we can come up with is, are we truly remaining in him? Are we really doing it? Because he makes a promise there to us. He says it right there. He says, if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. But it starts with if you remain in me. When our life isn't producing fruit, when we're not seeing the results of faith, when we're not growing in our faith, when we're not helping others grow in their faith, when we're not bringing other people to him, when we're not of any consequence to anybody growing spiritually, including ourselves, then the question has to be asked, are we spinning our wheels and wasting our time? Because let's face it, we're putting in the hours, but what are we putting in the hours to do? Are we putting in the hours for Christ? Are we putting in the hours with him? Are we just putting in the hours at church? Being fruitful with your life brings glory to God and provides evidence that you are with him. You know, I've used the analogy before where, you know if I've been, you know, like if there was a house that caught fire, a building that caught fire, there's no way to not know that a person has been there around that environment. Why? Because they smell like soot. They smell like a burning building, you know. You don't have to go that far with it. Just go, when you leave here, go pump some gas. Get some on your hand. See how that works when you get in the car and they're like, wait a minute, can you please go wash your hands here? And it's like, it doesn't matter how much hand sanitizer you use, right? Because they put that smell in gasoline so you can identify. You know when a person's been around gasoline. You know when a person's been around something burning. You know, I have kids, right? I know when they've washed good in the tub. just come close, give me a hug. Oh, no, you got to go back. You know, some kids are better than others. But you know where a person's been. You can tell, you can pick up on these things. Do people know that you've been walking with Jesus? Do they know that your faith is anchored in Jesus? Because guess what? It will be evident. It will be evident to all. And so we have to remember that the fruit of our life is that evidence. Are you growing? Are you bearing fruit? End with a few questions here. Number one, are you an expert on Jesus and discipleship or just church? Has your investment been in seeking him or learning the rules? Now keep in mind, this is, you know, like we talked about in 1 Timothy there, when it says watch your life and your doctrine closely. This is in no way a distinction that says one is more important than the other. Just like it says in 1 Timothy, it says watch your life and doctrine closely, persevere in them both. But we can't just be experts at the church and rules and the Bible, and yet our life is not about people. Our life is not about helping others. Our life is not about interacting like Jesus did. There is no, you know, I've talked about this before, there is no imitating Christ without involving yourself in other people's lives. That literally, that's not reconcilable. There is no way to put those two things together. And so we have to ask ourselves, are we experts at Jesus or are we just experts at the church? Because if we're just experts at the rule book, we're just experts at how church should work, we're just experts at being here on time on a Sunday morning, that can't save anyone. That can't move anyone. That's not faith. What knowledge and wisdom have you acquired as a result of listening to the Spirit? What has walking with him taught you? You know, I talked about that with the whole, you know, teaching my son baseball. There are things I can teach him, but he has to go up to bat. He's got to stand up there at the plate. You know, I was sharing this with somebody yesterday, actually, at our men's breakfast, how, you know, I was thinking about as my kids get older, you know, I'm thinking of how they are going to respond, how they look at Christ, how they are going to have a relationship with God on their own. You know, just like I can't go up and bat for my son, you know, I can't go out there and catch that pop fly for my son. In the same way, I can't go before God for my son. I can't go before God for other people. He has to have a relationship with God on his own. And much the same way, we have to remember that no matter what I teach, no matter what I say up here, no matter what we share with one another during Bible study, no matter how clear we explain it, you have to go live it. You know, and it's usually when we're in crisis where it's like, man, you know, we pray and then we see God work. Well, the reason why you see God work in crisis is because that's when you're praying the most. Because that's when you realize your dependency on God. We have to recognize that the Spirit is constantly trying to get your attention. It's constantly trying to increase your faith and show you how to live, show you how to think, show you how to apply the scriptures and the things that you're learning to your life. You know, it's like that saying about, you know, are you a processing plant or are you a refiner? Do you take information in and process it and, you know, internalize it? Or do you refine it and make it into something useful? The Word of God is useful when we actually apply it to our lives and we go out on faith and we allow it to be lived. Do you live a life worthy of imitation by others? How will anyone know that you do? Is the fruit of your life enough evidence to those seeking Christ that you've been with him? Does the way that you live in your day-to-day walk, you know, because you think to yourself, man, how can I really cut the gas for Jesus? You know, how can I pump this gas for Jesus? How can I go make this transaction at the bank, make this deposit for Jesus? And see, When you say that on the surface, it's like, no, there's really no way of doing it. Well, yeah, actually there is. Because everything that we do in life reflects that we've been with Jesus. Like I said, you don't even have to talk to somebody and know that they've got gasoline on their hands or they got it on their shoes or jeans or something. You don't even necessarily, we all know those people where we don't necessarily know anything about them, but we can tell the kind of life they've lived. You know, sometimes you see somebody, you're like, man, I can tell they lived a hard life. You know, or you can look at somebody and tell, man, you know what? I don't know anything about them, but they sure look happy. You know, they are sure happy about something. I don't even know if they deserve to be happy. Doesn't matter, because they're really happy. Does the way that you live reflect this? Because let's face it, we know that we live in a world full of miserable people. We live in a world full of people who are lost, people who don't know their left from the right. They don't know where to find the answers. We can often sometimes take for granted the fact that we know we can just flip to a particular scripture or we can just pick up the phone and call, you know, Tony, because he ain't doing nothing. You just say, hey, Tony, man, I need some help. Can you tell me where this passage is, right? Can you help me out with this thing? We just kind of take that for granted. We live in a world surrounded by people who don't know how to do that. But they're watching you. They see the way that you live. And at some point, when they're ready, they're going to come to you and they're going to want to know the answer. But they have to know that the answer is there, and they know that the answer is there because you've been manifesting this in your life all along the way. People stop me all the time, and they ask me, how'd you lose all that weight? I'm thinking, man, I didn't realize I lost that weight. I mean, Crystal tells me every Sunday. She's like, man, you need to eat something. Like, you're losing a lot of weight, you know. But the point is, it shows up in your life. Is it showing up in your life that you've been walking with Jesus? Are people wanting to imitate you? Do they want to imitate your marriage? Do they want to imitate how you raise your kids? Do they want to imitate your friendships with one another? They might if they saw it. They might if they actually saw it and if you were actually out there living rather than just thinking and believing and you were actually doing. And finally, in what way do you need to invest differently to become more fruitful in your walk with God? In what way do you need to invest differently? Because let's face it, sometimes, you know, and I've been there where, you know, man, I put a lot of time and energy into this thing, and I've really been investing in the wrong place. This is not yielding me any return. Nobody would continue month after month, you know, by week that you get your check and you're investing in an account and it's yielding you no return. Nobody would do that. We see what Jesus was saying, and he said, you know, that's what he was talking about. He said, no, branches that don't bear fruit, they get cut off because they're not producing anything. And you don't look at that and think that's strange. Why? Because you wouldn't do it. Why would you just constantly invest in something that's not yielding a return? We have to ask ourselves, if I'm investing all these hours and I become an expert at something but it's yielding me no return, then maybe I need to redirect my investment. Maybe I've been investing a lot into certain ventures, worldly things. Maybe it could be, you know, I spend all my time, my job and in my career, my business, or I'm investing everything into my family. Maybe I need to redirect this investment more directly into God, into prayer, into asking God to show me how to become more like Christ. If that's where you are, maybe that's just, you know, how it's been. Say, I didn't know. See, the tragedy is not in, man, I did not know. The tragedy is not in, hey, you know, I'm 30, I'm 40, I'm 50, I'm 60, and I didn't know that I could invest in this and yield a return. I've been wasting my time spinning my wheels. The tragedy is when you know, when it's presented to you, and you're unwilling to change. That's one of the things I love when I first got a chance to meet Tony a few years ago when he moved here. He was talking about how him and his wife, like, you know, they were like, man, we weren't like little kids. We weren't young, you know, and they studied the Bible and they realized, man, we really, you know, we knew we needed something, but you know, it wasn't what we were doing. And they were grown and had kids and were, you know, I ain't going to tell you how old they were because I don't want to give up how old they are now. The point is, they were adults. They were well beyond being young. And yet, that saying, old dogs and new tricks, you know, it's never too late to change when you've been wasting all of your time and energy into something that's producing nothing. In order for us to bear fruit, we have to be willing to go out there like we saw with his disciples. Step out on faith. Step out on faith and say, I'm going to walk away from my wasted life. I'm going to walk away from whatever it is that hinders me, and I'm going to follow Jesus. If you're in that place, maybe you've never given your life to him, then don't just say, well, maybe later, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe some other time. No, now is the right time to drop those nets, to say, I'm not going to continue to waste my time. This is what Christ died for. He died for the church. This is why the church is supposed to be here, so that we can help people be able to find him, so that we can show people what it means to live a life that is worthy. If you're in that place where you need to redirect that investment, you need to become an expert on how to live the way that God wants you to live, this is the time and the place to do it. We're getting ready to end here and have our song of invitation. Come forward. Come forward. Ask for the prayers of the church. Be willing to learn what it means to really be a true Christian. Maybe you don't want to come forward. Pull somebody aside afterwards. Say, can you help me? Can you teach me? Can you show me what it means to be a Christian? Because I don't want to be wasting hundreds and thousands of hours into something that is fruitless. Maybe you're one of those people that, yeah, I'm, you know, completely clear on church rules and all the things that come with being a member of the church, but I haven't been walking by faith. Let us pray for you. Be open. But don't walk away from here and continue to do the same thing and invest in the same emptiness and only the rules. Let's live a life. Let's live lives that are worthy of the calling that we have, that are completely filled with faith. Let's go live lives where faith moves and faith matters. Please stand as we sing our song of invitation.